We're continuing our reading. Mantra 2, one of my favorite mantras. Kurvan eveha karmani jijivi shek shatam samaha evam twai nanyate tosti na karma lipyate nare. Kurvan, doing continuously, eva, thus, iha, during this span of life, karmani, work, jijivi shek, one should desire to live. Shatam, 100. Sama, years. Avam, so living. Twai, unto you. Na, no. Anyata, alternative. Na anyata, there's no alternative. Ita, from this path. Asti, there is. Na, not. Karma, work. Lipyate, can be bound. Nare, unto a man. One may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. For that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There's no alternative to this way for man. Purport, no one wants to die. Everyone wants to live as long as he can drag on. This tendency is visible not only individually, but also collectively in the community, society, and nation. There's a hard struggle for life by all kinds of living entities, and the Vedas say that this is quite natural. The living being is eternal by nature, but due to his bondage in material existence, he has to change his body over and over. This process is called transmigration of the soul, or karma bandhana, bondage by one's work. The living entity has to work for his livelihood because that is the law of material nature. And if he does not act according to his prescribed duties, he transgresses the law of nature and binds himself more and more to the cycle of birth and death in the many species of life. Malini, you want to read next?
Other life forms are also subject to a cycle of birth and death, but when the living entity attains a human life, he gets a chance to get free from the chains of karma. Karma, akarma, and nikarma are very clearly described in Bhagavad Gita. Actions that are performed in terms of one's prescribed duties, as mentioned in the Vedic scriptures, are called karma. Actions that free one from the cycle of birth and death are called akarma, and actions that are performed through the misuse of one's freedom and that direct one to lower life forms are called vikarma. Of these three types of action, that which frees one from the bondage to karma is preferred by intelligent men. Ordinary men wish to perform good work in order to be recognized and achieve some higher status of life in this world or in heaven, but more advanced men want to be free altogether from the actions and reactions of work. Intelligent men well know that both good and bad work equally bind one to the material miseries. Consequently, they seek that work which frees them from the reactions of both good and bad work. Such liberating work is described here in the pages of Sri Ishopanishad.
The instructions of Sri Ishopanishad are more elaborately explained in the Bhagavad Gita, sometimes called the Gita Upanishad, the cream of all the Upanishads. In the Bhagavad Gita 3.9, shlokas 3.9 to 3.16, the personality of Godhead says that one cannot attain the state of naishkarma or akarma without executing the prescribed duties mentioned in the Vedic literature. This literature can regulate the working energy of a human being in such a way that he can gradually realize the authority of the Supreme Being. When he realizes the authority of the personality of Godhead, Vasudeva or Krishna, it is to be understood that he has attained the stage of positive knowledge. In this purified stage, the modes of nature, namely goodness, passion, and ignorance, cannot act, and he is able to work on the basis of naishkarma. Such work does not bind one to the cycle of birth and death.
Actually, no one has to do anything more than render devotional service to the Lord. However, in the lower stages of life, one cannot immediately adopt activities of devotional service, nor can one completely stop fruitive work. The conditioned soul is accustomed to working for sense gratification, for his own selfish interest, immediate or extended. An ordinary man works for his own sense enjoyment, And when this principle of sense enjoyment is extended to include a society, nation, or humanity in general, it assumes various attractive names, such as altruism, socialism, communism, nationalism, and humanitarianism.
Page 25.
These isms are certainly very attractive forms of karma bandhana, karmic bondage. But the Vedic instruction of Sri Upanishad is that if one actually wants to live for any of the above isms, he should make them God-centered. There is no harm in becoming a family man or an altruist, a socialist, a communist, a nationalist, or a humanitarian, provided that one executes his activities in relation with Isavasya, the God-centered conception. Should I continue?
Go ahead.
In the Bhagavad Gita 2.40, Lord Krishna states that God-centered activities are so valuable that just a few of them can save a person from the greatest danger. The greatest danger of life is the danger of gliding down again into the evolutionary cycle of birth and death among the 8.4 million species. If somehow or other a man misses the spiritual opportunity afforded by his human form of life and falls down again into the evolutionary cycle, he must be considered most unfortunate. Due to his defective senses, a foolish man cannot see that this is happening. Consequently, Sri Isopanishad advises us to exert our energy in the spirit of Ishavasya. Being so engaged, we may wish to live for many, many years. Otherwise, a long life in itself has no value. A tree lives for hundreds and hundreds of years, but there is no point in living a long time like trees, or breathing like bellows, or begetting children like hogs and dogs, or eating like camels. A humble, God-centered life is more valuable than a colossal hoax of a life dedicated to godless altruism or socialism.
Swami, you want to do the next one? And we'll save the last one for Chaitanya Leela. She can practice her English.
When altruistic activities are executed in the spirit of Sri Isopanishad, they become a form of karma yoga. Such activities are recommended in Bhagavad Gita verses chapter 18:59. Further guaranteed their executed protection from the danger of sliding down into the evolutionary process of birth and death. Even though such God-centered activities may be half finished, they are still good for the executor because they will guarantee him a human form in his next birth. In this way, one can have another chance to improve his position on the path of liberation.
Chaitanya? I mean, Sachimata, I'm sorry. Everyone's looking at me like I'm...
God-centered activities is elaborated, explaining the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami. We have read this book in English as the Nectar of Devotion. We recommend this valuable book to all who are interested in performing their activities in the spirit of Sri Upanishad.
Hari Bol, very nice. You've been taking lessons, I think. Nice reading. So I said this is my favorite verse or one of my favorite verses in Sri Upanishad because when I was going to the airport every day in San Francisco to distribute books, I used to chant this on the way to the airport as I was driving. And then one day I was speaking to a gentleman who was just on the verge of buying a book. He wasn't sure. And this verse came into my mind that... if he doesn't, there's no alternative. He has to take a book. And I felt so determined. And when this verse came into my mind and he was looking at me, I could tell he could see it in my face that it changed, that I decided that you have to have this book. And he bought it. And I was thinking how Krishna had manifested through this verse. And I was thinking how important it is that, the human form of life is so valuable that... Prabhupada said in one lecture that maybe millions and millions of births before you get a chance for the human life. And if you don't take advantage of it, it may be millions of births before you get another chance. Material nature is, it can be very cruel, actually, and it's very mechanical in a way. And if we don't take advantage of the opportunity, or if one doesn't take the advantage of the opportunity, then you can lose that opportunity and, you know, go back down into the species where you don't have an opportunity. So it's such a benediction just to have a human form of life. Labha sudulamamidam bahusambhavante. We can look this verse up. There's a couple of verses that talk about the importance of the human form of life. And one of them you'll find in your shloka book, Labha sudulamami. 275? Let's look at this verse. 275, page 275. This verse is spoken by the Avadhuta Brahman who instructed King Yadu. And the Avadhuta Brahman was also an incarnation of Dattatreya. And those of you who are reading or have read this story in the 11th canto, he had many gurus. Do you know how many gurus he had? Anybody? 24 gurus. Do you know what some of them are? Very nice. You got seven. Give her a hand. How do you go? So Maharaj Yadu was wandering and he found the Avadhuta Brahman who was an enlightened soul. And he asked him who his guru was. And he told him, he mentioned 24 gurus. And she had mentioned seven of them there, including the wind, the sky, the mountain, the arrow maker, the prostitute, the karari hawk. On and on it goes. There's 24 different ones. Where he had observed from natural circumstances or ordinary circumstances something profound which connected him closer to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in any case, he spoke this verse to Maharaj Yadu. Labha sudulabham idam bahusambhavante. I'll say it and then you repeat. Labha sudulabham idam bahusambhavante. Manusha martadam anityam api hadhiraha.
Manusha martadam anityam api hadhiraha.
Turnam yateta napated anumrityu yavan.
Turnam yateta napated anumrityu yavan.
Nikshreyasaya vishaya kalu sarvatasyat.
Nikshreyasaya vishaya kalu sarvatasyat.
After many, many births and deaths, one achieves the rare human form of life, which, although temporary, affords one the opportunity to attain the highest perfection. Thus, a sober human being should quickly endeavor for the ultimate perfection of life, as long as his body, which is always subject to death, has not fallen down and died. After all, sense gratification is available, even in the most abominable species of life, whereas Krishna consciousness is only possible for a human being. Recently, a godbrother of mine was in a car accident in India, where he and his wife had been thrown from the car, and they were badly injured. And now they're recuperating in the Delhi guest house. And his wife had to have one of those halos put on because she cracked her neck, so she can't move her head. And he broke 9 vertebrae in his spine and many other parts, a rib. It's a horrible accident. They were thrown from the car. It spun out of control because the driver was going too fast, trying to overtake somebody. And, you know, you've driven in India before. Sometimes those roads are a little crazy. Of course, they're crazy here too. But in any case, he woke up from the accident on the road, you know, in excruciating pain and basically in a pool of his own blood. Finding that his car was being looted by people as he lay there, and you know, cameras and anything else they could get. And then when the police came, they took him to the hospital. And he wrote to a godbrother recently. I saw it on a Prabhupada disciple conference I'm on, that he had said that you know, he had been chanting really good japa for the months before that happened. And then when he woke up in that situation, you know, came to consciousness, in so much pain he could barely breathe because he broke his rib. And I don't know if it punctured a lung or not, but in any case, it was very hard to breathe. And he said then he realized that now I have to chant. And it's not easy. Sometimes the situation we can get in can be so dire. In fact, he said in the thing he was talking about how other devotees have been in car accidents, he said they were much luckier than I was because they died. He felt that, you know, he's incapacitated for the next 8 months. He can't even move because, you know, but he was talking in that circumstance. He was reminding all of us that we will be in a situation like that or some situation where we could be at any time. And therefore, we should practice chanting all the time, practice calling out for Krishna, and remember that we should be dhira. It's mentioned in this verse that one should be dhira. Dhira means that you should be sober and take very seriously the opportunity of the human form of life. Don't waste time. Take every opportunity that you can to make practice, because it can be over at any time. This ho-ho-ho, ha-ha-ha, everything's okay, is an intoxicated state of life that most people are in, and it's easy to fall into and forget how dire actually is the situation, how rare is the opportunity that we have. So it's just a reminder to take the human form of life very seriously so that we can go back to Godhead. And there's one other verse I wanted to point out, which is in the same vein, and it's spoken by Lord Krishna to Uddhava, or to the, let's see, where is the verse? Delay or inconveniences are regretted. Maybe it's in the 11th canto also. Let's see. Rideham adyam sulabham sudurlabham. Here it is, page 279. Lord Krishna instructs Uddhava. Krishna himself is speaking to his best friend, Uddhava, and he gives him this instruction. I'll say, then you say, because these are such nice verses, we should all learn them. Rideham adyam sulabham sudurlabham. Plavam sukalpam guru karna dharam. Mayana kulena nabasvateritam. Puman bhavabdhim nataretsa atmaha. This is the human body, which can award all benefit in life, is automatically attained by the laws of nature, although it is a very rare achievement. So nrideham means the human body. It's a very specific thing. Out of all the millions of species, it's very special. Nrideham. Adyam, because it's the source of all favorable results. Adyam sudurlabham. It's very rare, but sudurlabham means, sulabham means it's effort. We get it automatically. It's not like we asked for it. We just won the lottery, you know. But it's sudurlabham, it doesn't happen very often. Out of all the species, it's very rare. But we've got this opportunity. And then plavam means a boat. So it's compared to a boat, the human body. Sukalpam means it's extremely well suited for its purpose. And the guru, the spiritual master, is karnadharam, or the captain of this boat. So we have the boat and we can take instruction, Hare Krishna, from the guru. Maya, and also Krishna is speaking the verse, so he says, Maya, by me. He's also giving many instructions, like in the Bhagavad Gita. We can take unlimited shelter of the Bhagavad Gita and get what is called in the next verse, anukule. Anukulena means favorable nabasvata winds. So the boat has the task of going across the ocean, and the favorable winds are the instructions of the guru, the favorable winds are the instructions given by the guru, who's the captain of the boat, and also by Krishna himself. Iritam, it's impelled. Puman, a person, bhava of material existence, abdim, he can cross this ocean. Taret, saatmaha, and if he doesn't do so, he's called an atmaha, which is also there in the Sri Upanishad. We know this verse, asuryanamate loka andhina tamasavrita tamste pratyabhigachanti ye ke cha ma janod hano janaha. He becomes the killer of his own soul. As we heard this bhajan that Satyadev Prabhu sang before he left about Hari Hari Bipale. That's how I've knowingly drunk poison. You know, I have the opportunity right in front of me and then I just squander it. It's miserly. So this is also another verse to remember how important the human form of life is. And then, of course, back to the Ishapanishad, this verse, Kurvan Eviha Karmani. Raksha Prabhuji, give him the microphone.
Another verse that I think we are reminded by this verse, and it's more like an aphorism from the Vedanta Sutra, the first aphorism. It says, Atato Brahma Jignyasa. Now that you have been given this human birth, inquire into the nature of the Absolute Truth. And this verse is related to it because it says, what is the consequence if one does not inquire into the Absolute Truth? It's a wasted life if one doesn't go on that path, which is the verse that you just said, says that if one doesn't get on this boat and follow the spiritual path, then it's a wasted life. And Atharo Brahma Jignyasa is making a call that now that you have this human life, make use of it by inquiring into the Absolute Truth.
Nice. Atato Brahma Jignasa, and Srila Prabhupada gives a wonderful lecture about that verse in which he says, Ata, which is the first word of that aphorism, which means therefore. And he says, therefore, because you've tried everything else, therefore, because although he was speaking to the Americans, the American disciples, and he was saying, therefore, because you were born in the wealthiest country, but you still weren't happy. Therefore, since you've tried every kind of sense gratification and you still didn't find satisfaction, therefore, now you should inquire, what is the Absolute Truth? How can I find Brahman, the greatest? There were some other points in this purport about three kinds of activity, karma, vikarma, and akarma, a nice karma. And somebody want to comment about that? Karma, vikarma, and akarma. Anyone want to give commentary? Yeah, use the microphone.
Activities performed according to the scriptural injunctions are like karma, and activities which are performed without any attachment to the results, without any anticipation for anything bad from that. That is akarma. And going against the principles of the Vedic scriptures is vikarma, which is what you call it as the negative effects. And Prabhupada says both karma and vikarma both bind us, because vikarma gives like negative results or bad effects, and karma gives positive results, but still it binds us to this material world. But we should be practicing akarma, that is, practicing without any attachment to the fruitive results.
How can we do that?
By performing devotional service to Krishna.
But I have a job, I have a family, I have a car payment, I have insurance. Does that count? Can that become akarma?
Any work which is in Ishavashya consciousness, as Prabhupada says in the purport, that if we think that I can use only things which are necessary for my sustenance, and then in that consciousness, if we work, then we are not bound to any of the fruitive results. We can just maintain our body by doing our duty at the same time, have Krishna in the center, then.
So if I just think this is all belongs to Krishna and I just go on with my life, then is that become a karma? In my mind, I just consider what's all belongs to Krishna. Does that indemnify me from karma?
You can also act in that vein.
Oh. Like? What kind of activity? Is there any practical thing that I could do?
we get so many things from Krishna, just for our sustenance. We get food grains from Krishna. Not just thinking that, oh, this belongs to Krishna, I know, let's still keep eating. But we do perform a sacrifice by offering it back to Krishna. Then that would be liberating kind of work than to just thinking in my mind, this is Krishna. I can take it as much as I want.
You know Gopala Ban? Probably used to tell Gopala Ban stories. And he told how Gopala Ban, he was a rascal. And he was a big landowner and he used to grow all this wheat. And so his friends used to get on his case all the time. He said, Gopala Ban, you're such a miser. He said, you're a big landowner, you're making so much money, you're putting in the bank, and you're growing all these grains. Why do you ever offer anything to the Lord? And he was carrying a big tray of grains from the field. And a big wind came at the time, and it blew the grains, and they went flying through the air, and he goes, I offer that to Vishnu. So, Krishna is fully aware of our intention. Ye yatamam prapajante tamstataiva bhajamyaham. That he, according to our surrender, if we surrender 2%, Krishna will reward us 2%. And if we surrender 10%, Krishna will reward us 10%. So we can also, according to our means, we should surrender the fruits of our work. When Giriraj Maharaj was here, remember he gave a class and he commented on the verse, karmanye vadikaraste mapalishu kadachana na karma palahetu bor mate karma Spakarmani. Is that the last line? Mate sangat spakarmani. Akarmani. So that the idea of this verse is that you're never entitled to the fruits of your action, and nor should you renounce your duty. And you should not be attached to not doing your duty. And then you should do your duty, but you should also surrender the fruits. So his point was that many people pick up this verse and say that it means just do your work. I've heard this many times. People are a little bit familiar with Bhagavad Gita and say, what does it mean? They say, karmanye vadikaraste, just do your work. They said, what about the other part? Is give up the fruit. And he gave the example of taking a hen, and you like the part of the hen that gives the egg, but then you don't like the part that eats because you have to feed it all the time. So you say, well, I'll just take that part off. But it doesn't work like that. Actually, we actually have to give the fruit to Krishna. And then, of course, we'll become satisfied because it's like watering the root of the tree. Otherwise, if we hold back or we try to cheat Krishna, then he's very expert at also cheating us, much more expert than we are at cheating him. You were going to say anything? Yes, George. Give him the microphone.
Could you also comment on Naish Karma?
Naish Karma.
Yeah.
So give him some.
It's the same as Akarma, like acting in a consciousness that everything belongs to Krishna. And not be attached to the results, and that be free from bondage for all the activities you perform. It's the same as Akarma.
There's a verse from Narada Muni's instructions in the first canto, fifth chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Naish Karmyam Apyavart Arjit. It starts with Naish Karmya. Let's look it up. Naish Karmyam Apyachuta Varjitam. It's a very important verse.
171.
Page 171. It's a nice sounding verse too. Naish karmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam. Nashobate gyanam alam niranjanam. Kutak punak shashvada bhadramishvare nacharpitam karma yadapyakaranam. Much to the point. Naish karmyam means here in this translation self-realization. Being freed from the reactions of fruit of work. Because the two are intimately connected, not different. Can anyone prove that from Bhagavad Gita? How that's true? the idea that someone who is completely detached from the fruits of their work and surrenders it unto Krishna while they're working doesn't take the fruit for himself. He's not attached to it, nor is he attached to sense gratification. Where does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita that that person is known to be self-realized? That is not different from self-realization, because you look at this word for word, naishkarmyam, first thing, it's translated self-realization, or, comma, being freed from the reactions of fruit of work. Being freed from the reactions of fruit of work really means that we have no more desires for the fruit. No? No more desires for the fruit. Because it's not that they're eternally attached to us, it's that we're addicted to them. We're used to taking the fruit. We're used to engaging in sense gratification. But when we become enlightened through knowledge to understand that actually I'm not the enjoyer, and that it's a diseased condition of life to try to enjoy the senses, my happiness comes from my connection with Krishna and by giving to Krishna, and I have a specific purpose in serving Krishna, then we actually are no longer interested in the fruit of our labor. It's a burden. It's superfluous, actually. Do you have some verses from the Bhagavad Gita? Ramaswamy's got something. Okay, yeah, we want to hear all these related verses. Give him the microphone, would you?
This is in chapter 5, verse number 14. The translation is, the embodied spirit, master of the city of his body, does not crave dead bodies. Nor does he indiscriminately act, nor does he crave the fruits of action. All this is nectar by the most of material nature. So in one way, the embodied spirit is actually not even acting. Everything is just like being done by the modes of material nature. We are simply witness here. But out of ignorance, we simply identify ourselves with one particular character, and we think that we are the doer of everything that is done by that character.
Nice. Nice point. Very much related. I'd like a verse from the Gita. It would be nice, that where Krishna says that one who is devoid of desire for sense gratification, whose every act is devoid of desire for sense gratification, is known to be self-realized, to be fixed in consciousness. Do you remember we went through some verses like that in the second chapter, just recently? We can go back to those, because remember, it may be in this section. Arjuna asked this question in text 54 of chapter 2. What are the symptoms of one whose consciousness is thus merged in transcendence? How does he speak and what is his language? How does he sit and how does he walk? I mean, that's somebody who's naishkarmya, who's acting in such a way he's not creating any karma, because he's surrendering the results all to Krishna. He's no longer attached to those fruits. If we're addicted to the fruits, then gradually through following the rules and regulations and through gaining sambandha jnana, actually knowing who we are, it's backed by knowledge. Tashtradhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashnyantyatmani chatmanam bhakti shruta grihitaya. Who knows that verse that I just said? Tashtradhana, besides Malini. Tachtradhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya paschantya manichatmanam bhakta shruta grihitaya. This verse is from a set of 34 verses that everyone here should learn, and they're from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter. And you should learn all those 34 verses. You can do it very easily by writing them down or having a copy and carry it with you and just sing them every day. And this verse says that the seriously inquisitive person, the person who's very serious about spiritual life, tashtradhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya, his devotion should be backed up by jnana and vairagya. And these things will be supporting agents to help in his devotional service. It can't be sentimental, like we read a couple weeks ago, that religion without philosophy is simply sentimentality. In other words, you can become fanaticism even. This happens not just in Christianity or in Islam, but in every religion, including, you'll find in ISKCON, you can find fanatical people. It's in every realm. We find if someone's not well-informed and actually practicing and feeling detachment, then we can become fanatical. But so our devotion should be backed by knowledge and detachment. Tashtradhana munayo jnana vairagya yuktaya pashyantyatmanicha manam bhakta shruta grihitaya. And also, he should be well-versed in the scripture. This is very important to know, why. What is the siddhanta? Siddhanta means understanding with pinpoint accuracy the philosophy, and we should discuss it thoroughly threadbare. You should have groups that you meet with regularly to discuss Bhagavad Gita and these other, like we're discussing here, but it should be ongoing, regular basis. Hear the philosophy, discuss certain points very clearly so we can understand. Siddhanta means what something is and also what it's not. And Siddhanta Bhule Chitta Nakara Alash. The Chaitanya Charitamrita Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, shouldn't be lazy and think these things aren't important, the philosophy is not important. And where were we? Were we finding something? Yes. Naishkarmyam. And we were looking at the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 55. Krishna says, O Partha, when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, remember this verse? And when his mind thus purified finds satisfaction in the self alone, then he is said to be in pure transcendental consciousness. Naishkarmya. I mean, we can tell for ourselves. We can tell for ourselves. Prabhupada described it. These modes of material nature, especially passion, rajas, it's the mode we come in contact with it and we'll feel impetus for improvement in every way to try to improve our material condition. And there's also an interactment between us and the objects in this material world that is considered and called by Prabhupada to be like a pinching. We're being pinched. Like if you try to sit down, like the question was here, how does he sit? And you sit down to try to do your bhajan, and then you have to get back up again. Why? Because I got to go. I got things to do. I got people to meet. I got to do business, and so on and so forth. But a person who can find satisfaction in the self alone, not necessarily that we're even sitting, but even while moving, you can feel satisfaction because you're engaging in service without attachment to sense gratification, service for service, actually. You're doing service for service. Not for some motivation, not for some return, not certainly for some prestige, which is very dangerous for devotional service, for the advancement of a devotee to become attached to prestige, pratishta. So when a man gives up all varieties of desire for sense gratification, which arise from mental concoction, it's a concoction. So then this is naishkarmya. And so this verse says, Naishkarmyam apyachuta bhava varjitam. So, very nice language here. Bhava, the conception, varjitam. Nashobate jnanam alam niranjanam. That shobate means beautiful or something that looks nice. Hare Krishna. And nashobate jnanam alam niranjanam. If one's process of self-realization, even if it's free from material affinity, if it doesn't look well, if it's devoid of a conception of the infallible God, what then is the use of fruitive activities which are naturally painful from the very beginning and transient by nature if they are not utilized for the devotional service of the Lord? So we should come to the position of naishkarmyam. Of our activities should be centered around Krishna. This is the information we got from hearing Malini. That we should center our activities around Krishna. And we can be engaged in so-called ordinary activities. It may appear to be ordinary activities, but if we're surrendering the fruits of our work to Krishna and we're acting in our work so that we can have more time to hear and chant, to perform devotional service, then we'll be acting in this Naishkarmyam position. And gradually, Krishna will give us every advantage, every opportunity to increase in devotional service. By slow degrees, through incremental involvement, we'll become more and more fixed in our service. So, yes, Prabhuji.
I would like to go back to this page 279 of Shloka.
Yes.
And in the translation, the last line, considering all these advantages, a human being who does not utilize his human life to cross the ocean of material existence must be considered the killer of his own soul. So two things.
Can you give him the microphone?
Who is this... says, considering all these advantages, a human being who does not utilize his human life to cross the ocean of material existence must be considered the killer of his own soul. So first of all, who is this human being? Is it the soul, or is it, if it is the soul, then it is saying that this soul should be considered the killer of his own soul. So first of all, the soul will never die. So I'm finding it a little troublesome to see.
Yeah, when it means killer of the soul, this is explained in the Ishapanishad, where the same phraseology is used about one's a killer of one's soul, means that actually, of course, the soul can't be killed. The Atma, Krishna explains, Achedyo yam, adayo yam, akledyo shoshevacha, nitya sarvagatasta anur, achalo yam sanatanaha. He's eternal. And he can't be burned, he can't be dried, he can't be cut to pieces by any weapon, etc. So this killing of the soul means that one has the golden opportunity, something that's very rare, and then one misuses it. And practically speaking, this is considered from the perspective of those who see how valuable this is, what we've attained, and what is the potential of the soul from this platform of the human body. It's practically like you killed yourself. You really blew it. It was, sometimes students used to say, back in the 60s and 70s, they'd tell Prabhupada, they'd say, what's the big deal? You know? What if I become a dog? You know, dogs are happy, they run free. And this is due to lack of knowledge, because if we look and we see some living entity in an abominable condition, like in Vrindavan, so much you see the hogs, they live in filth, and they eat filth all day long, and they love it. They're forced to by the modes of material nature. Hog can't stop his nose and mouth from going to the ground all day long. I've seen it before. If you try to restrict him, it'll just go right back. And they can't be... I saw in Delhi once someone had to go catch a hog and put him on a rickshaw. It was a big one, too. And boy, you could hear the screaming. I was up in the top of the guest house, and you could hear screaming for about a mile from that hog, you know, being taken away from his activity of going through the gutter. He couldn't be separated of that for a moment. For us, you know, you'd say, well, how would you like that? To be in that situation. And from a position of knowledge, you can say, no, not very much. I don't want to be in that position. But if we forget and we don't utilize the human form of life, which is specifically for the purpose of self-realization, then by the laws of material nature, if we just disregard it and we don't take advantage, this is called atmaha. We're killing the soul. Now, of course, the soul is eternal, and through course of time and spiritual evolution, he'll get another chance to come back to the human form of life at some point. But the time period could be so long and so excruciatingly painful to be separated from that opportunity. It's like you've squandered the most important thing. So, you know, human life means responsibility, because we're given consciousness where we can actually realize ourselves and come to some understanding that I'm not my body. And so, you know, the soul is different from the body, but at the same time, it's like we've been given a vehicle. And if you misuse your vehicle, then they take your license away, right? You say, here's a vehicle, You can go anywhere you like. And then you drive drunk and you drive on the wrong side of the road. And then you do it twice or three times. And then you go to jail. And then they say your license is restricted for the next, you know, 5 years or 10 years or something like that. I think Britney Spears or somebody lost their license from driving on the, right? Oh, she never had one. Well, anyway. But it happens, you know. Recently there's been a rash of these movie stars going out driving drunk and everything. They get their license taken away. They go to jail. And this is what happens. We're given this opportunity and then we misuse it and then material nature restricts it. It's actually out of mercy, though. It's kind of like someone who's causing a huge ruckus in town. They get drunk and they start shooting up the town, so the sheriff comes and he locks them up in the drunk tank until he sobers up a little bit. And the next day he lets them back out again, you know. So material nature is like that. If we're not sober, if we don't take advantage of the opportunity, then we get locked down again by material nature and we have to go through the process, grind it out through, you know, you have to, you, when you're a dog, you have to bark at the moon. You can't say, I'm going to go to Bhagavatam class. You don't have that opportunity. When you're a pig, you have to eat stool. It's what pigs do. You're forced to. When you're a worm, you have to crawl through the mud. And it's just the way, that's the law of material nature. It's a law. So human form of life means responsibility. We have to understand that I have a responsibility and I should utilize it. So that's why the Shastra is there. Shastra is saying to us, it's trying to wake us up. It's saying, you have a responsibility, you know, utilize it. And that's mercy. It's telling us. And that's why we're trying to get the full weight of it by, you know, sitting down, listening, back and forth, talk about it, hear about it. Because the atmosphere in Kali Yuga is so surcharged with this idea of just do whatever you want, willy-nilly, and you'll be okay. There are all kinds of crazy philosophies, you know, where everyone justifies everything that, you know, well, we're all God, or you're God, I'm God, or, you know, whatever your truth is, you can just believe whatever you want. Well, if it makes you happy. If you actually, you know, analyze these things very carefully, what most people's philosophy are that aren't based on Shastra, they become ludicrous after a while, or they're not, you can't substantiate them. So Krishna says, Ye Shastra Vinamutsrija Vartate Kamakarata Nasa Sinim Abapnoti Nasukam Nasukam. What is it? Nasukam. Anyway, you can't get, if you don't follow Shastra, you don't get happiness, you don't get perfection, and you don't get something else. What else? The Shastra Vidamutsrija Vartite Kamakarata Nasa Sinim Avapnoti Nasukam Nasukam Nasukam. Okay, you find that verse. Anyway, you have to follow Shastra. You have to follow the, you know, and it's giving us clear instruction about what to do and what not to do. And it's for our own good. And if we just disregard it and say, oh, I don't care for that, then Mogasha Moga Karmano Moga Jnana Vichetasa Rakshasim Asurim Chaiva Prakitim Mohinim Shrita. That verse I quoted, it's 16th chapter, right? No. Yes, Shastra Vidham Utsrija. Did you find it? Ye Shastra Vidham Utsrija. If you give up Shastra and just act independently, Yes, Shastra Vidham Utsrija Vartate Kamakarata Nasasukim Avapnoti Ye Shastra Vidham Utsrija in the Bhagavad Gita. In any case, so we shouldn't become killers of the soul. We should surrender to Krishna, and we should follow Shastra, and then we'll be directed properly, utilize this human form we've been given, which is like, you know, you've been handed the keys to a very expensive race car, very, very expensive, you know, jet plane, and you should read the instruction manual how to drive it. Don't just put, you know, anything in the tank. Take care of it and utilize it the best of your ability. Don't become, don't throw it away. Trample on it. So let's hear the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. I've been hankering to hear this chapter again. Any other points? You look like you're about ready to make a point. No? Okay. You found it. 17? No, it's not the first verse.
This is 16:23.
There it is. There we go. Let's look at this verse. What a great verse this is. Page 677 in your Bhagavad Gita. Ya shastra vinam utsreja vartate kama karataha nasa siddhim avapnoti nasukham na param gatim. That's what I was missing, the param gatim. You don't get happiness, you don't get perfection, and you don't get the ultimate goal, the supreme goal, if you don't follow shastra. This is, he who discards scriptural injunctions and acts according to his own whims attains neither perfection nor happiness nor the supreme destination. So Krishna recommends, follow shastra. Even Krishna follows shastra. He'll quote from shastra when Arjuna asks questions. He'll say, well, according to the Upanishads, it says like this. And he's the source of all these things, but he follows the shastra. So the shastra is there to give us proper direction. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it mentioned how anarto pasanam sakshad bhakti yoga badhoksaje, that the great sage Vyasadeva, he knew that people in general, loke, vidbhams, that they would be ignorant and be lost in the age of Kali Yuga. Therefore, he compiled Chakra Sattvata Samhitam. He compiled the great Sattvata Samhita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, to give complete direction and guidance to everyone in this age. So by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, actually, we can have all light as to how to act properly. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, in that shastra, you'll hear examples of our own life. It's very powerful because we'll become inoculated from the influence of material nature by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in fact, it's so powerful that even if you don't understand the language of the Bhagavatam, if you hear it, because they're mantras, each shloka is a mantra, and will bring purification of heart. But of course, understanding it is also even better. If we hear it and we understand the stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam, like sometimes devotees come and they have problems. They'll say, "This is happening in my life." There's always some place you can go in the Bhagavatam and say, read this section. You'll find yourself in here. In fact, that happened recently. Someone was asking me about a very difficult situation they were in. I was thinking, what should I tell them? And I thought, it's in the Bhagavatam. And I found the section and I asked them to read a particular section that so much was so similar to what they were going through that they were astounded. And if we go through Bhagavatam, we'll find all that. And it solves the problems of our problem of life, which is this identifying ourselves as the body, and it redirects us to engage in loving service to the Lord. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that automatically the soul doesn't come out of this ignorance. It has to take outside help. And that outside help, it comes from the shastra. If you hear the shastra and you follow it, then you'll come out of the maya mugda jivirna hi swata krishna gyan. He said, it's not automatic, swata, that you can come out of maya, because maya is too strong and we're too much entrenched. How long have we been entrenched in maya? That's a long time. That's forever. That's called anadi karma. It's beginningless. It's so long, it's beginningless. You can't even calculate. You just say it's forever. This is who we are. We've been addicted to this. So to come out, Krishna's mercifully sent the shastra, and he sends his representatives, and he comes himself, and so on. But we can take advantage of the shastra. We can hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and it gives us the instruction about what to do. We can hear it, and then when we hear it, we actually become emboldened to practice it, because it's not easy to face up to the senses. The senses of the mind, they're so used to pushing us around that they just think, oh, he's a wimp. He'll do whatever I say. But then if we regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam, like Kamasya Nindriya Pritir Labo Jivete Yavata, Jivasya Tatva Jignasya, narto yascheha karmabhi. Life's desire should never be aimed at gratifying the senses. We shouldn't have indriya priti, means love for the senses. It's like so many people have love for the senses. I was on a walk the other night, and there was some event going on at the local high school, and I just happened to be walking by, and the people were coming out of this football game. And I saw this family come out, and the man, as soon as he got out of the gate, he goes, "To the bar!" So excited to go to the bar. And I was thinking, for someone who has a taste for that, it's a very exciting thing. Indriya priti, you know, it's like, I can't wait to have that experience with my senses. And so Bhagavatam's saying, no, kama sa nendriya pritir. Don't have this love for the senses, because these senses are bad masters. But what should we do? Where should we put our attention? Kamasya nendriya pritir labho jiveta yavata jivasya tatva jignasya narto yascheha karmabhi. Life's desire should never be aimed at gratifying the senses. Rather, one should live a life of self-preservation. You can take what you need, as the Ishopanishad said, to preserve your life properly. That's allowed in Shastra. That you have to, you can't live below your means, below what you need to satisfy your senses in a basic way. That's not required. But you should live in such a way, in such a basic way, that you're satisfied. You know, you're satisfied, you're taken care of, but you save the balance of the time for inquiring about the Absolute Truth. That's what the Bhagavatam says. And inquire through hearing from the Bhagavatam, hearing from the sadhus, you know, who have realization of the Bhagavatam. And then you come up and you come out of this situation of indriya priti, and then you become freed from this becoming a killer of the soul. Malini.
Guruji, in that same mantra 2.4.4 saying, Prabhupada says, like, no one wants to die, everyone wants to live as long as he can drag on.
Mm.
So even for an aspiring devotee, if I start thinking, if I die at this point, I feel that I'm not prepared to die. So should we also aspire to live longer to prepare to die, or should we?
Yes, well, we should be careful, because first of all, this body is given to us by Krishna as a gift, so we shouldn't be careless and throw caution to the wind. We should take care to not put ourselves in positions where we'll be endangered, because there is such a thing as untimely death, actually. It sounds a little funny, because we say, oh, it's all just karma. But there is such a thing as becoming an untimely death. So we should be careful to take care and preserve our life. It's actually our duty, part of our duty in the human form of life, to make sure that, you know, we take care of our life so that we can live our full lifespan to become Krishna conscious. However, we should also know, as Prahlad Maharaj says, balasya neha sharanam pitaro nishingha nartasya chaga namudanbati majato nyo tasya tat pratividir yaihanshesthas tavad bibo tanubitam twarupekshitanam. Twarupekshitanam means if the Lord neglects you, then there's nothing you can do to save yourself. And he gives several examples. He says, balasya neha sharanam, that parents actually can't give shelter to their children. Well, you say, that's ridiculous. I give shelter to my children all the time. But so many parents who had the best intentions to take care of their children, and they failed. And the children died of some disease, or the children were kidnapped, or the children, you know, anything could happen. So balasyaneham, first he says, for children, you know, parents, they'll do their best, but ultimately, what can they do? Then he says, a boat on water cannot save a drowning man. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, gives the example of the Titanic. Titanic was an unsinkable ship. Did you know that? And did you know that it sank on its virgin voyage? It's just leaving for the first time. It's an unsinkable ship. And they didn't put enough lifeboats on because they said it'll never sink. So this is material consciousness. I think I'm okay. But it sank. And no one could save them. The boat couldn't save them. They didn't have lifeboats. So many people drowned and froze to death in that water. And then he says, medicine cannot protect, a sick person. And he gives the example that, one person may have a disease and he's given the medicine and he's cured. And another person, same thing, given the medicine, nothing happens and he dies. So Prahlad Maharaj says, so that doesn't mean that we don't try to take care of our children. We have to do everything we can to protect them. And it doesn't mean that you should be reckless and drive on the wrong side of the road or something like that. And also it doesn't mean that when you get sick you should avoid medicine. But what it does mean is that you should be fully aware that it's up to the Lord whether it works or not. This is Krishna consciousness. You take every step that you can to protect yourself and your children in a reasonable way. But you should be aware of the fact that ultimately it's Krishna's sanction of whether you're saved or not. Mari Krishna Raki Ke, Raki Krishna Mari Ke. If Krishna wants to protect you, no one can kill you. And if Krishna wants to kill you, no one can protect you. And we should think like that. And so there's a balance. We should actually take care of Krishna's body. Sometimes devotees, with all good intentions, have contemplated suicide, like Sanatana Goswami, because when he came to see the Lord at Jagannath Puri, he had gone through the jungle. He had to drink all kinds of bad water, and he got these oozing sores on his body. And then when the Lord saw him, he embraced him every time because he loved Sanatana Goswami so much. And Sanatana Goswami was in so much anxiety that the Lord was touching his body in that condition, that he was making such an offense. He felt so bad about it that he contemplated throwing himself under the Rath Yatra car during the Rath Yatra. He thought, I'm making such an offense. I'm such a lowly person with these sores on my body and the Lord embracing me. I can only just end my life. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, could understand his mentality, being the super soul. And he told him the next day, he said, you give up this idea. He said, you've already given your body to me. It's not yours. He said, well, what are you, some kind of, when someone gives you something valuable and then you just throw it away? He said, it's not yours to give away. He said, I have so many things I want to do through your body. I'm going to perform so many devotional, spread Krishna consciousness through you, through your body. I'm depending on you. It's not your property anymore. So the sadhaka actually thinks in this way. And when you enter into devotional service as a sadhaka, you get a new kind of body, actually, according to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You're no longer, it may appear to be a material body, but you take this diksha initiation. Actually, there's a change that takes place. You have a new kind of body. You have a sadhaka deha, or a body which is simply meant for practice. You may look and say, oh, it looks like a material body. No, actually not. It's a body which is taking you back home, back to Godhead. So you have to protect it. You have to take care of it. And we should think, it's not mine. I have to take care of this for the Lord. It's his property. I'm using it in his enhanced service. And that means, depend on Krishna. And also it means depend on Krishna's intelligence that he gives you also, how to take care of yourself. We have to also see Krishna is giving us the intelligence how to take care. And fanatical diets and all kinds of, going to the ends of the earth for all kinds of medicine stuff was not really looked on very favorably by Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes devotees get into really fanatical ways of eating or things like that. And Prabhupada was like, take prasadam, take whatever medicine is available that it will cure you the most quickly. So there's a practical side to taking care of yourself and always keeping in mind that at any time we can lose it. And who knows when that might come. Nirguna Prabhu has just got maybe a couple weeks left. Great devotee. He's probably only in his 50s, probably early 50s. And he's been a book distributor his whole life since 1976 or something. And sweetest devotee in the world. He's in Mayapur now, but he's leaving his body soon. And just thinking, he was just reflecting on how, we should take advantage of every opportunity that we have, because we don't know when that time is going to come when we have to leave this body behind. So we should take advantage of every opportunity that we can to engage in devotional service. Shall we hear the third chapter of the Gita? Let's go through, starting on page 147, and let's read the translations in their entirety. And shall we read in unison, or do you want to pass it around from one person to the next? Those who want in unison, raise your hand. Those who want to pass it around, raise your hand. Wow. Unison? Pass it around. I think the unison won that time. Okay. All right, here we go in unison. Arjuna said, O Janardan, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O sinless Arjuna, I have already explained that there are two classes of men who try to realize the self. Some are inclined to understand it by empirical philosophical speculation, and others by devotional service. Not by merely abstaining from work can one achieve freedom from reaction, nor by renunciation alone can one attain perfection. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. On the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga in Krishna consciousness without attachment, he is by far superior. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work causes bondage to this material world. Therefore, son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free from bondage. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods, along with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, Be thou happy by this yajna, sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. And the demigods, being pleased by sacrifices, will also please you, and thus by cooperation between men and demigods, prosperity will reign for all. In charge of the various necessities of life, gods satisfy forms of yajna, sacrifice, necessities to you. But he who enjoys these gifts without offering to the demigods in return is certainly a thief. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who perform food for personal sense enjoyment barely eat only sin. All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced of rains. Rains are produced by performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is performed with prescribed duties. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas. Vedas directly manifested from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice. My dear Arjuna, one does not follow in human life the cycle of sacrifice established in the Vedas, certainly leads a life full of sin. Living only for the satisfaction of the senses, such a person lives in vain. For one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to spend any other living being. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty, For by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. Kings such as Janak attain perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Whatever action a great man performs, common men follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. O son of Pritha, there is no work prescribed for me within all the three planetary systems, nor am I in want of anything, nor have I need to attain anything, nor in prescribed duties. For if I fail to engage in carefully performing prescribed duties, O son of Partha, who follow my path, if I did not perform prescribed duties, all these worlds would be put to ruination. I would be the cause of creating unwanted population, and I would thereby destroy the peace of all living beings. As the ignorant perform their duties with attachment, the learned may similarly act, but without attachment, for the sake of leading people on the right path. So as not to disrupt the minds of ignorant men, attached to fruit of results of prescribed duties, a learned person should not induce them to stop work. Rather, by working in the spirit of devotion, he should engage them in all sorts of activities for the gradual development of Krishna consciousness. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. One who is in knowledge of the absolute truth, O mighty armed, does not engage himself in the senses and sense gratification, knowing well the differences between work and devotion and work for fruitive results. Bewildered by the modes of material nature, the ignorant fully engage themselves in material activities and become attached. But the wise should not unsettle them, although these duties are inferior due to the performer's lack of knowledge. Therefore, O Arjuna, surrendering all your works unto me, with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, with no claims to proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions, and who follow this teaching faithfully, without envy, become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. But those who, out of envy, disregard these teachings and do not follow them regularly, are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. Even a man of knowledge acts according to his own nature, for everyone follows the nature he has acquired from the three modes. What can repression accomplish? There are principles to regulate attachment and aversion pertaining to the senses and their objects. One should not come under the control of such attachment and aversion because there are stumbling blocks on the path of self-realization. It is far better to discharge one's prescribed duties, even though faultily, than another's duties perfectly. Destruction in the course of performing one's own duty is better than engaging in another's duties, for to follow another's path is dangerous. Arjuna said, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? The Supreme Personality of God had said, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. As fire is covered by smoke, as a mirror is covered by dust, as the embryo is covered by the womb, the living entity is similarly covered by different degrees of this lust. Thus the living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satisfied and which burns like fire. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, and in the senses, slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. Working senses are superior to dull matter. Mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is higher than the senses. Thus, knowing oneself to be transcendental to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should steady the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. Because the intelligence has, it makes it has discriminating power. And it's, what is discrimination actually? Discrimination means improvement. That's what it means. Because what are you discriminating for to make some improvement? And therefore, it's said that the intelligence is born of the motive passion. Because the intelligence is making this discrimination for improving the situation. So therefore, it's described like that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto, a section of Lord Kapiladev instructing his mother Devahuti, and he's describing the Sankhya philosophy and how the different senses, including the mind, the intelligence, are formed. And the mind, of course, is more of a passive entity because it's simply accepting and rejecting. Therefore, it's described as in the mode of goodness. However, in the hierarchy that Krishna is describing here, of one being higher than the other, this is based on spiritual discrimination by which one is coming to know the soul, and therefore the hierarchy is there, and it doesn't apply to the basic intrinsic nature of those entities of the intelligence and the mind. Okay? All right. Ramaswamy asked about that last week, and I promised him I'd give him an answer this week. So let's read one of the purports that we're up to in the third chapter. Don't you love this chapter? Mm-hmm. Everyone who just heard this chapter and read this chapter is now, your life is guaranteed success. No matter what happens in this life, you're guaranteed success from hearing this one chapter. So powerful, hearing one chapter of Bhagavad Gita. What to speak if you could take advantage every day and hear a chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Then you're directly being... Krishna is directly speaking to you. You're being directed by Krishna himself. You're taking advantage of Shastra. And it will fulfill all your desires. Everything we want comes from this, from hearing the Bhagavad Gita. Because Krishna is a cowherd boy. And the Bhagavad Gita is like a cow. Sarva Panishado Gavo, Dogda Gopalanandana, Partavatsa Sudhir Bhokta, Dugda Gita Mritam Mahat. And so Krishna is milking this cow of Bhagavad Gita. It's Kamadhenu cow. It fulfills all desires. Everything we want is there within Bhagavad Gita. And so Krishna is distributing that milk first to Arjuna, who's like a little calf. You know, calf's eager to get the milk always. Can't keep him away practically. It's so hard when the calf wants to drink the milk. And then it's meant for everybody else too, because the Kamadhenu gives how much milk? Unlimited milk. The Bhagavad Gita, since Krishna spoke it, it's been giving everyone solace for thousands of years. Other books come and go. Libraries full of books. But Bhagavad Gita goes on and on and on because it's as deep as the ocean, deeper than the ocean, and has unlimited capacity to solace our burning in this material world and give us direction how to go home back to Godhead. It's Krishna speaking directly. So each chapter is perfect in itself. Each verse, shloka, each half a shloka is perfect. And just by staying in contact with Bhagavad Gita, our life will become perfect. And we'll become nourished by this milk of the Bhagavad Gita. So let's read one of the purports. Here we are still going through the purports at the very beginning. And we'll read this text number 10 on page 155. Saha yagya prajashrishva puruvacha prajapatihi anina prashyavishya dvam eshavo stvishtakam adhuk. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, be thou happy by this yagya sacrifice because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation. So, who is the, in the beginning of creation, who is the Lord of all creatures? Sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifice for Vishnu. And who's saying this? Be thou happy by this yagya.
Brahma.
So Brahma is saying this. And now, before we go into the purport, so this basic, here's a message in this verse. Be thou happy by this sacrifice. counterintuitive to the Western culture. I don't want to do any sacrifice. I just want to enjoy. But it's saying here, be thou happy by this yajna. If we remember this about be thou happy by yajna, by sacrifice, we'll actually be happy. Because it actually is through sacrifice that we become happy. Now let's hear some other sources, other shastras that we know in our group here, of other places where Krishna talks about the power of sacrifice, performing tapasya. For Bishva and Rupali? Are they with the IRS? Tell them we don't know them. Oh, somebody find out who they are and give them some prasadam, invite them in. Thank you. So how about from, who can think of one, who comes here at 7:30 a.m. on Saturdays who chants the whole Brahma Samhita, who can remember a verse from the Brahma Samhita that talks about sacrifice or tapasya? Pantastu koti shatavatsara samragamyo vayodhapi manaso munipungavano. Okay. So make your point. Give him the microphone. Rajagopal is going to give us some nectar.
No, this is not about sacrifice.
Hare Krishna, welcome. Please come in. Everyone can move up by 7.5 inches. By the way, just so you know, Driti, who is one of the best artists in ISKCON, you'll find her paintings throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, a classically trained artist who does beautiful paintings of Krishna, came here a couple days ago and repainted the deities for us. She did it last time a few years ago, and therefore the deities are taking rest for a few days, and that's why there's no darshan tonight. But you can feel satisfied that they're being well taken care of. All the offerings, artiques are going on. It's just that they were just painted, so they're taking rest, except for artiques and things. And they'll reveal themselves in a couple more days. Sthadipatene. Okay, please.
Pantastu Koti verse means that I worship the primeval Lord Govinda, who was worship my munis and yogis who do penances for millions or lots of time with the in the speed of Pantastu Koti Shatavatsam, in the speed of mind or thought, and they at last end up in the meditating on the light that is reflected from the toe of the Lord.
Yeah, and the idea of that verse is actually by that kind of austerity and penance, they don't get very far. That's the idea of that verse. Because they're drilling the respiration and they're trying by their own mental power, you know, to reach Goloka Vrindavan. But it's saying that they don't even reach the tip of the toe of the lotus foot of the Lord by that kind of endeavor, which is more austerity from the materialistic side, from the side of trying by our own power. But it kind of gives us the, you know, a 3D look at what we're talking about. Did you find something about penance? Yes. What do you have?
Exactly.
Give him the microphone.
Penance, but,
because we want to hear this theme, because we all want to become convinced that by doing yajna, we'll actually become happy, right? Okay, let's hear.
That is another verse in the 18th chapter.
18, speak in the mic.
About the benefits of sacrifice. That is yajna dana 18.5, page 706.
706, page 706.
Text 5. Yajna dana tapa karma na vajayam karyam eva tat yagno danam tapaschaiva bhavanani manishinam. Acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls.
How about that one? Let's give him a round for that. Very nice. A very important verse. Sacrifice, charity, and penance should not be given up at any time. You can talking about renouncing things, but you never renounce those because they purify even the great souls. So this is the great wealth. It said the wealth of the Brahmins is this tapasya. So sacrifice, tapasya. What else do we have? Convince us through Shastra that we should perform yajna, sacrifice. Yes. Nayam deho deha bhajam riloke kashtan kam amarhate vidbujam ye tapo divyam putraka yena satvam shudyad yasmad brahma saukyam tonantam. You can find it in your shloka book. Nayam deho deha bhajam riloke. He says that this human form of life goes back to some of the other verses we were talking about at the beginning of class. It's very special. It's not like he names the hogs. Favorite in Shastra, hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. So he names the hogs and he says a human form of life is not like that. It's not meant to be like a pig. But it's meant specifically for something. What is that? Tapo divyam, divine austerity. Tapo divyam, putraka, yena sattvam, because it purifies the self. Shudyad yasmad brahma saukyam tonantam. You can come to this spiritual happiness by performing tapasya, spiritual tapasya. Who can tell me from Shastra specific kinds of yajna, tapasya that is recommended for the age of Kali Yuga? You got to give me the Shastra. Because we want to know, now we know, tapasya, perform tapasya. So I'll say, I'm going to go find a desert somewhere, I'm going to light fires, and I'm going to sit down in the middle of. And what do you tell me, Banu? Is that a good idea in the Kali Yuga? Huh? I'm hearing Harinama verses coming out already. Banu, what if I go to the forest and I sit down in the middle of fire, or I'm going to go up to the mountains? I'm going to go up to Truckee in the mountains. I'm going to find the coldest stream and submerge myself in there and freeze. Is that good austerity for this age? No? Okay, go ahead. Let it loose.
Saratam kirtayanto mam kedan kashchadrabhataha. So that's the correct thing to do for this age.
So Krishna tells in the Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years ago, Satatam kirtayanto mam yatan tascha dridavrita namashyantascha mam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. The devotees are always chanting my glories and hearing about me. And how about, like, what's, I want to see it written on the bottle for Kali Yuga. Written on the bottle. What is the prescription? Okay, go ahead. Harinam, 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 Evakim. A very clear verse from the Brihat Naradiya Purana, which says, Harinama, Harinama, Harinam, Eva Kevalam, means Eva and Kevalam. That's very strong language. Two things. Certainly, only this in the age of Kali Yuga. Kalo nyasteva, nyasteva, nyasteva. Three times. There's no other way, there's no other way, there's no other way. Except by chanting the holy name of the Lord. I want more. Okay, give her the microphone. I want to hear her belt it out. She learned this verse 1 month ago and she's got it down. Okay. Come on, give her a hand. She went out and learned that verse. Now, give us the purport, the explanation.
Whatever acts you perform, tapasya you perform in Sakti Yuga, and
through meditation.
Through meditation, and in Treta Yuga by meditation. Treta Yuga.
Sacrifice. Yeah.
And in Dwapara Yuga, by worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, can simply
like temple worship,
temple worship,
yeah.
Can simply be attained in Kali Yuga just by chanting the holy names.
Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Nice verse, just by Sankirtan. So let's hear another verse which prescribes Sankirtan for the Kali Yuga. And do you know where it's from? Yeah, it's from the Srimad Bhagavatam. You can look up this verse. It's there. Kalir dosha nidhi rajan astehi ko mahanguna kirtanadeva krishnasya mukta sanga param vijay. It says that this age of Kali Yuga, you'll find it in your shloka book, is like an ocean of faults. Does that sound familiar? It's an ocean of faults. Everywhere you look, there's problems for spiritual life in Kali Yuga. But there's one good thing. There's actually one great thing, one great quality about Kali Yuga. And that's just by chanting in Sankirtan, just by performing Sankirtan, one can cross over the ocean. I want more. Give more evidence. Yes, Ramaswamy. Oh, yes, it is. It's Karabhajana Muni in the 11th canto of the Navayogendras. Karabhajana spoke all about Kali Yuga, and he gave us this famous verse. And who knows the verse that he's talking about? Yes, Malini. All about Lord Chaitanya. Can you say, give the microphone, tell us about the verse. This is about sacrifice in the age of Kali. Yajantihi sumedasa. Those who are very intelligent will take to this kind of sacrifice. They won't go to the forest and sit in a pond or something. But they'll do this. 271 page in your shloka book. Give her the mic.
In the age of Kali, intelligent persons perform congregational chanting to worship the incarnation of Godhead, who constantly sings the names of Krishna. Although his complexion is not blackish, he is Krishna himself. He is accompanied by his associates, servants, weapons, and confidential companions.
Yajnai Sankirtana Prayer Yajantihi Samedasa. This is Yajna. Sankirtan is Yajna. And those who are very intelligent, Karabhajana Muni says, they will take to this Sankirtan process in the same method and manner of the Panchatattva. They came and danced, sang, chanted. They distributed the love of Godhead like anything. So that's our program also, right? And I'll show you one more verse. Turn the page, 273. Right down the pipe, here it is. Kalim sabajayantyarya gunagya sarabhagina. All of you, everyone here tonight is Sarabhagina. What does that mean? What's Sar? Sar means?
Essence.
Like the cream, the essence, right? Sarabhagina. So what are all of you, the Sarabhaginas? You're able to pick up the essence. So everyone here, Kalim Sabhajayantyarya Gunagya Sarabhagina Yatra Sankirtanenaiva Sarva Swarto Pilabhyate. Those who are actually advanced in knowledge are able to appreciate the essential value of this age of Kali. Such enlightened persons worship Kali Yuga because in this fallen age, all perfection of life can easily be achieved by the performance of Sankirtan. They worship Kali Yuga because of this one wonderful thing. It's Sankirtan, the Sankirtan Yajna. So that's where the key of life lies in Yajna. And in Kali Yuga, that's Sankirtan Yajna. So take it from Shastra. Fortify your mind, your intelligence, your determination that to enter into Sankirtan. This Sankirtan goes on, congregational chanting of the holy name of the Lord. What else does it mean? Somebody elaborate. What is this Sankirtan Yajna so we all know how to do it? What does it mean, Sankirtan Yajna? When we talk about Sankirtan Yajna, somebody give me some enlightened realization and Shastra to back up how we can act. How should we perform Sankirtan? Who's speaking? Yes. Yeah, give him the microphone. I want to hear more out of Gaurav.
Glorification of the holy name.
Glorification of the holy name.
Purification of our heart.
Keep speaking. Don't stop. Tell us how to do it.
Following the
path chopped out by the previous acharyas.
That's pretty good. Let's give him a hand. Give him the Hari Guru. He's chomping at the bit back there. Make sure that microphone's on then. We want to get the full effect.
I think it is to glorify the Lord with whatever abilities one has and remaining in his profession or in his duties, but you utilize it to glorify the Lord and not to leave his duties or responsibilities, but it has to be with the duties.
Well, I'm a garbage man. How should I do that?
Better clean the temple.
That'll be his answer to every question. He's in charge of, along with others, of cleaning the temple. Touche. Yes, clean the temple. Yes, Ramaswamy, give him the microphone. I want to hear. Yes.
This is a question. At all these places, the word Sankirtana is mentioned. Sankirtana literally means congregational chanting. It's not chanting alone. It's congregational chanting.
Yes.
So that's what is recommended for this stage of Kali.
Yes.
So literally, does it mean that we have to focus more on congregational chanting rather than just chanting alone?
No, it means we should follow the instruction of the acharyas. And so Haridas Thakur, he would chant japa, but he'd chant loudly, and sometimes he'd chant softly. But japa is for one's own purification and personal purification. Ja means birth, pa means sin. You become free from all sin and from rebirth by chanting japa. And then we also enter into Sankirtan, and that's especially potent because when you're in the assembly of devotees, you get all the sukriti that they have and all the enthusiasm that they have also comes to bear. Like, have you ever been morose and then you walk into a big kirtan? It's happened to me before. It's like you're morose and you come in and on the mental platform, and then you come in and the big kirtan's going on. What's the worst thing you can do for Mr. Morose, who wants to hang on to being morose? Worst thing you can do is walk in the middle of the kirtan. Because there'll be somebody there. They'll see you. They'll look and go, he's morose. Get him in here. And immediately you'll become happy. You can't help it. I had this, it was actually not in this temple, but in the old temple back in when we had the storefront. Bhakti Vishram Madhavan Maharaj was visiting, and he had just been on a world tour or something. He had these electronic things he was carrying around with him. He had a camera and some other recording device or something. And so someone handed him the madunga to lead the kirtan, and it was too expensive just to put down in a corner or something. So he handed it to me, and I put them in my pockets, and they were fragile and very expensive. He said, "Be really careful, And then the kirtan started, and I wanted to dance and jump like anything, and I couldn't raise my arms because I was holding on to these things, And then I started thinking in my mind, these are like my anartas, You put them in your pockets like, wow, I'm going to keep this. This is really, and here's another one, You start loading up with all these with these material desires. But when you come into the kirtan, and I was thinking, if you just raise your hands in the air and start jumping, they'll all fly out and just come out. But it's hard to be in kirtan holding everything like this. I realize that. I don't volunteer for that service before the kirtan. But it's a fact, when you enter into Sankirtan with the devotees, there's a exponential effect. But it's not that we also don't do japa. It's very potent, and it's an important type of practice that we... because we're going to die alone also, maybe. I mean, we could die in the middle of a raging kirtan too, which would be nice. King Kulashekar prays, let me die now when I'm Krishna conscious, Because no guarantee, when it might happen. So, yes, Hari Guru.
I'd just like to add one thing.
Yes, he'd like to add one more thing. No, go ahead.
So
Yes.
I feel that the stress on Sankirtan for this age is more because this is the age of quarrel and hypocrisy, and if you are not participating in Sankirtan, there is no other way you can work on those things unless you participate and cooperate with others through Sankirtan, through glorifying Krishna. There is no way you can come overcome the vices of quarrel and hypocrisy and double standards.
Pass the mic up to George. He's nodding his head. I want to hear why. He's got some. Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming. Please come back soon. Yeah, you do, because you were agreeing with him. So you had some realization. You, I think especially when he was talking about cooperation.
There's, you know, by ourselves, we can only do so much. But when we're together, we're very strong.
It's really true. I was thinking and speaking to someone the other night about why I first started coming down to give the Bhagavad Gita class on Wednesday nights, which was how many years ago? I don't know. Like 7 years ago, Raksha? 8 years ago? Something like that. And the real reason was so that I'd always have to be there to read Bhagavad Gita on Wednesday night. It was for my own purification to be there with the devotees because I knew if I locked it in, and that night to come in and do the class, that I'd be there with the devotees and we'd have a discussion. And I do that on other nights too. You know, when Satyadev's here, I go to his house on a certain night and I know it's locked in. Sometimes Srivas Pandit comes over on Monday nights, you know, to my house and we read. And it's very important to have these points in our life when we're obligated. It may feel like obligation at first to the mind, you know, to do these things, but then we have a taste for it, and this is our actual salvation. And cooperation, such an important thing, to work with a group of devotees and to cooperate to spread Krishna consciousness. There's no greater feeling, at least for me, having this team of devotees here for Sankirtan and seeing everyone doing a part. And also, you see the potential of every devotee, too, because everyone is part and parcel of Krishna and has God-given intelligence and can do so many things. So when we come together with this bigger mission and we work together, then we can see and gain faith how devotees come forward. And now Gaurav's got something more to add to that. Give him the microphone.
The other reason is so that one can understand the sambandha gyan, knowledge of one's relationship with the Lord, and then acting in that relationship so that one can achieve the goal of life, which is self-realization. And going back to God so that one can serve the Supreme Lord there in the eternal contribution of the Supreme Lord.
Very nice. Thank you.
Again, this is not my realization, this is my understanding from the Shastra.
And very accurate too. Okay, so now let's read the purport to the verse, and we'll just come back to the third chapter, 10th verse, was it? Yeah, okay, so in the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generations of men and demigods along with sacrifices for Vishnu and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation." Purport. The material creation by the Lord of creatures, Vishnu, is a chance offered by the conditioned souls to come back home, back to Godhead. All living entities within the material creation are conditioned by material nature because of their forgetfulness of their relationship to Vishnu or Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedic principles are to help us understand this eternal relation as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaishcha sarvaraham eva vedya. The Lord says that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand Him. In the Vedic hymns, it is said, Patim Vishvasyat Meshvaram. Therefore, the Lord of the living entities is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, 2.4.20, Srila Sugadeva Goswami describes the Lord as Pati in so many ways. Sriyapatir, Yagdapatir, Prajapatir, Diyampatir, Lokapatir, Dharapati, Patishkat, Patir Gatish Chandraka Vrishni Satvatam Prasidatam Me Bhagavan Satam Pati. The Prajapati is Lord Vishnu, and he is the Lord of all living creatures, all worlds, and all beauties, and the protector of everyone. The Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajñas for the satisfaction of Vishnu, so that while in the material world they can live very comfortably without anxiety, and after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. That is the whole program for the conditioned soul. By performance of yajña, the conditioned souls gradually become Krishna conscious and become godly in all respects. In the age of Kali, the Sankirtan Yajna, the chanting of the names of God, is recommended by the Vedic scriptures, and this transcendental system was introduced by Lord Chaitanya for the deliverance of all men in this age. Sankirtan Yajna and Krishna consciousness go well together. Lord Krishna, in his devotional form as Lord Chaitanya, is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32 as follows, with special reference to the Sankirtan Yajna. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam Sangapangascha Parshadam Jagnai Sankirtana Prayer Yajanti Hi Sumedasa. In this age of Kali, people who are endowed with sufficient intelligence will worship the Lord who is accompanied by his associates by performance of Sankirtan Yajna. Other yajnas prescribed in the Vedic literatures are not easy to perform in this age of Kali, but the Sankirtan Yajna is easy and sublime for all purposes, as recommended in Bhagavad Gita also 9.14, which you already gave us earlier. So we've talked about a few things tonight. We'll wrap up class now. But what did we talk about? Let's name some things that we covered. Huh? We definitely talked about yajna. And what else? What other points did we cover? Yes?
Acting as per the scriptural injunctions.
Acting according to scripture, yes. This is the, you'll attain perfection. Well, let's put it this way, the way Krishna put it. Without that, you won't attain perfection. You won't get happiness and you won't get the supreme destination. What else? What else did we cover tonight? One thing that you're taking back with you from the discussion. Yes?
You become happy by performing prescribed sacrifices.
You become happy by performing prescribed sacrifices, yes. Thank you. In performance of Sankirtan Yajna. Importance of Sankirtan Yajna, yes. Raksha Prabhu.
In addition to japa, the need for congregational chanting to enhance the effect.
The importance of congregational chanting in addition to japa. What else? Yes.
What works in the age of Kali for a person who's interested in self-realization?
Yes. What works in the age of Kali for who's interested in self-realization? Yeah. Any other points? Yes.
Don't chant with electronic gadgets in your pocket.
Yeah. Very good.
You answer the wrong time is Prabhu's question.
Yes.
That is more intelligence is the more passion.
Yeah.
You answered that question.
Yeah, yeah. Did you accept?
I could relate that because I remember I asked
that. Yeah, yeah. Right. Okay, what else? Anything else we covered? Anything else?
Karma, vikarma,
akarma. Yeah, karma, vikarma, akarma. Very important because, you know, our activities have consequences. What we do, we should know what the result is. This is part of sambandha gyan, you know, knowing who we are, knowing what a relationship with Krishna is, and knowing how to act properly. And, you know, if we actually have the knowledge, if we become enlightened in that way, our life will understand, our activities will be devoid of sense gratification because we'll see it's a detriment to us. It's actually like drinking poison. If we actually know that, then we're starting to come to the healthy position of life, healthy condition. It means we're not forced to drink poison. What else? Yes?
How we should chant, how we should take shelter of holy name at this point because we never know when death is coming.
Death can come in any minute. We should practice taking shelter of the holy name all the time. You know, we should try to chant 24 hours a day. We should try to increase our chanting. Yes?
And this body is a gift given by God to
yes.
us, and we should take care of it accordingly, and it's not our body.
Yes, very nice. Yes?
Tat-tat karma pravartana.
Tat-tat karma pravartana. Give the purport for everyone. Follow the path of the previous acharyas. Yes. Nice. What other points? Yes?
if one does not use the human life for the purpose of inquiring into the absolute truth, then that is tantamount to killing the soul.
Yeah, heavy stuff. It's so important, so important. Anything else? Yes, Hari Guru. Give him the mic.
Just now, somebody mentioned that this body is the gift of the Lord.
Mm.
And it just struck me that Sripad Maharaj had written in one of his articles about, he was commenting on the Vedanta Sutras. And there he mentions that Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Why is the word Athato so important? Is because this body is a gift. And the purpose of creation is that one can practice devotional service and achieve perfection so that he enables himself to go back to Godhead. And he mentions there that because it's a gift, it's our responsibility to honor that gift. And in that mood, one should practice devotional service. So that it's more one level of explanation given that why this is considered a gift and why you have to do it now.
Very nice points. And it brought up that Rakshit Prabhu had brought up this verse at Tata Brahma Jignasa earlier in the class as well. And very nice addition to that. Thank you very much. Okay, so we'll all have an opportunity to do Sankirtan. Tonight, of course, we'll have congregational chanting. The deity curtains will remain closed, but we'll have a kirtan, and then we'll have prasadam. We have some big events coming up. For Sankirtan, I'll just mention them briefly so that you know you have them in your mind. That is that we'll have... Did you look these over? I sent you a file. You didn't get it? Oh, you didn't check emails. Who else did I send it to? Okay. October will be the monthly Sankirtan Festival. It will be called the Festival of Steady Improvement. And it's in honor of the disappearance days of Raghunath Das, Raghunath Bhatta, and Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswamis. Three disappearance days on one day, on the following Tuesday. So we'll be honoring the Goswamis, and we'll be doing the Sankirtan Festival for them. Mark your calendars. The Sankirtan days are October 19th through the 21st. And on Friday, October 19th, will be a public Harinam, a Sankirtan performance in Palo Alto University in Emerson, starting at 6:59 p.m. And Saturday, Sunday, October 20th and 21st, massive book distribution throughout the Bay Area. Here's some suggested goals, although until they actually go onto the website and the postcard, they're not written in stone yet, but I saw Nilesh immediately sat up when the goal part. What is it? Team members will collectively list and implement at least 10 substantive improvements to Team ISV's Sankirtan system or infrastructure. That's exciting, right? 10 ways that we can make improvement. Yeah?
10 altogether.
10 big ones or small ones. But at least 10 improvements to our Sankirtan system and infrastructure. What do you think, Ramaswamy?
I was thinking about we should add another goal.
We will.
That we implement at least one of them.
No, they should all be implemented. It says implemented. No, it says team members will collectively list and implement. At least 10, not one. Number two, each team ISV member will write down and implement at least one personal improvement to his or her personal sadhana. What do you think of that? All suggestions. Okay, I got one thumbs up. From George, too, but nothing from Nilesh. Anyway, those are two suggestions for the goals for October. You know, it's all about improvements. We can look at things, stand back, look under the hood, look, you know, and check out what we need to improve. Do we need new mudangas? Do we need new sounds? Whatever it is, we have to go through and make 10 improvements. Okay? All right. Team ISV book and Lakshmi scores and implemented improvements. will be offered to Srila Prabhupada and the Goswamis at Wednesday night Gita class on October 24th. Because that's their disappearance day. So then Saturday, Sunday, November 10th and 11th, massive book distribution throughout the Bay Area. I'm not going to mention the goals now. First, we'll talk about them in the back incense-filled room and go through it. But that's for Govardhan Puja and for Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day. So it's going to be a big one. And then December, two weekends of Sankirtan, the Srila Prabhupada book distribution marathon. Traditionally, everyone goes out every day, but we're going to do two weekends, and those who want to go out on other times can do that. But that'll be November 30th through December 2nd is the first weekend, and December 14th and through 16th. There's a one weekend break in between for those who need a break. And important dates, December 15th is World Enlightenment Day. That's the day all over the world devotees go out no matter what and distribute books. Our goal is to do 1 million books in one day worldwide. And December 20th will be Gita Jayanti Day, the advent of the Bhagavad Gita. So we'll include that in the festivities, giving everyone an opportunity to distribute tons of Bhagavad Gitas. And there's some gigantic goals on for that month of December. Like, just suggested, we're looking at large numbers of devotees going out, maybe more than even we had for Bhaktivinoda Thakur's. What do you think, Nilesh?
Yeah, I'm going to India in
December. In December. Well, you can still go on Sankirtan when you get there, right? When are you going? Okay, sometime after the 20th, I hope. No, I'm just kidding. Well, anyway, we know that devotees, when Rakshit Prabhu went to Germany last time, he distributed two books to high-level scientists in a conference. And so that's accepted. This year, I'm leaving for Kartik, and I'll be away, but I'm still going to go out on those days. We're getting, as I told you, an ox cart, and we're going to go around Vrindavan and distribute books on that day. So anyway, these will all be posted and we'll talk about them more, but I just wanted to give everyone a taste. But the next one that's coming up that's imminent is on the 19th to the 21st of October. Okay? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gopriyamanande Hari Bol. Hare Krishna.